Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll have a call-in for Haitians. Should baby Doc Duvalier, now back in the country, play a leadership role, or should he be placed under arrest? We will take your calls. And coming up tomorrow on the Brian Lehrer Show, the Tunisia Revolution and the wave of self-immolations in North Africa. Might this be a turning point in Arab democracy? But last week, much closer to home, the state of New Jersey had to cut short a school construction bond sale on Wall Street when the bonds weren't selling very well. Some people are blaming statements like this by Governor Christie on 60 Minutes recently.
This is what I say to public sector unions. Listen, you can boo me now, but I'm the first governor who's walked into this room in 10 years and told you the truth. And here's the truth. If you don't partner with me to get this done, in 10 years you won't have a pension. And that's the truth.
The implication there is the state's inability to pay its bills. From the mouth of the governor, who also said he wouldn't engage in school construction borrowing without voter approval, as the state has done in the past. Saving a state without destroying it is complicated business. Christie is also in the news for trying to remake the state court system, so we'll talk about that and some more now with WNYC political reporter Bob Henley. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
What happened at that bond sale last week?
Well, it's very important to understand that, first of all, what's been going on in the public debt market has been going on for a long time, and that it's not just Governor Christie's comments.
Listeners, just so you know, that's not your cell phone going off. It's Bob's.
Sorry.
I thought you told them never to call you here.
Right.
Mrs. Giuliani, leave them alone. Just kidding.
One of the things is that there had been a lot of comments particularly in that 60 Minutes piece, you have Ms. Whitney, who was the person that presaged a lot of the problems with the global credit crunch, now saying that she expects dozens of municipal bond failures and defaults. And in that same appearance on 60 Minutes, Chris Christie was figured quite prominently, really as a driving star, talking about the current moment in New Jersey. It is true that New Jersey faces some $54 billion shortfall when it comes to its pension obligations, but that has been a bipartisan adventure in malfeasance, including, as we've talked about in this program, an unprecedented cease and desist order from the Security Exchange Commission, which chastised the state of New Jersey for basically misrepresenting from 2002 to 2007 the condition of its pension funds and the level of its contributions. So that's the universe we come in. And so in point of fact, though, that this debt that was they were trying to renegotiate these very expensive and I think highly speculative interest rate swaps that were a legacy of the McGreevy administration, some $1.8 billion. They were lucky to unload a billion of it, and they ended up pulling the sales because of this macro problem globally about sovereign and public debt.
So when Governor Christie comes in and says no new taxes, no new borrowing to close the budget deficit, does it technically break a campaign promise to even try to sell those school construction bonds, or is that off on some other track?
Well, it's basically there's other issues about continued borrowing, and you can have an argument on the question of his transportation plan, whether that constitutes fresh borrowing. But in point of fact, a key tool in public finance is renegotiating and trying to get out from underneath these very expensive interest rate swaps that were engaged in by nonprofits, hospitals, and governments. In fact, I think they should be illegal because they opened the state to an open-ended kind of liability. And moreover, what's happened recently is to be able to carry these on your books, you have to have so-called letters of credit where banks stand behind these bets, basically, nothing but a casino bet. And those letters are getting incredibly expensive. So whichever party was involved here, it could be a Democrat, it could have been John Corzine, he would have been trying to get out from underneath these bonds. They are time bombs, and they're all over the country.
Wow. And it's so hard for people to understand with these swaps. It was hard on Wall Street. It's hard in government. And how about the threat in the clip we played? If public employee unions don't cooperate on pension reform now, there will be no pensions in 10 years. What exactly was he threatening?
Well, it's not so much threatening. These are some actual realities, which is that the state of New Jersey back in 2001, when the Republicans were in charge, in fact, Christie uses this in his stump speech quite effectively, we had a situation where they raised the pension benefits substantially for public workers without having a funding piece because they looked at the actuarial circumstance and said, oh, this will carry itself. In point of fact, the state has been making promises. And then even during the Whitman administration, they speculated on the pension. They actually borrowed from it to play the market. And then during the Democratic period of time, they didn't make contributions into it. In fact, even in this current administration, Governor Christie balanced his budget by not putting in the $3 billion that was required in the current term under the idea that he didn't want to put it into, on deposit until he had wrested some kind of guarantees from the unions. Here's the problem. We're basically seeing right now the very tough debate is being presaged in the public union sector that we're having nationally about the social contract that existed that it was implied in Social Security.
Right.
Those were drafted in another time when people did not live so as long, and all of the actuarial presumptions were based on that. Now we're finding through life extension people are living longer, and we have to renegotiate all these contracts. That said, what the unions are concerned about is that Christie is leaving out taxing the super wealthy who have done very well through this whole period. So that's the story.
Not that that would close the entire budget gap either. But would it even be legal to cancel pensions of current retired people or of any pension provisions for current workers?
Well, across the country, each state deals with this differently. In some places, it's constitutionally implied as a requirement that you have to make those pension payments. In other places, it could be a situation where they just don't have the resources, and so you'll find, because it's not guaranteed like you have in private pensions. Under the federal system, there is a guarantee, if you will, but you get, like, I think 60 cents in the dollar. There's no such safety net, if you will, for public pensions. Quite frankly, we've talked about this in the program before. It's really time for a national evaluation of all these in the aggregate, because this is happening on every balance sheet in every state, every county and municipality. We need to bring these all together and look at them in a holistic way, because what's going to happen is piecemeal we're going to see local, county, states, and governments continue to cut current services, even as there's more demand for them because of the sustained flat period, unless there's some kind of a comprehensive solution.
WNYC's Bob Henley with us. And new topic, what's happening with the courts? Why is this a flashpoint right now between Governor Christie and the state Senate President Sweeney?
Well, last May, it all got started, I guess, when Governor Christie did not nominate sitting Supreme Court Justice John Wallace. Now, under the way the 1947 Constitution constructed the higher court, judges, associate judges, get a 7-year term, and then they're renominated after 7 years. And I guess short of some kind of felony conviction or some moral turpitude, generally, historically, they were always reappointed. Governor Christie made a major point in his campaign that he felt New Jersey's court, although it's well respected for its academic quality around the country, had moved too far to the left and been too interventionist, specifically through the Abbott v. Burke decision, where it really made the state step up and fund in a multi-billion dollar way and keep the promise inherent in the Constitution for a thorough and efficient education for all of New Jersey's children, irrespective of zip code. He felt they'd gone over the line there, and so he pushed to its full throttle his executive prerogative not to reappoint Justice Wallace. Now, he was the African-American member of the court, so there was a subtext there as well.
The only one.
Yeah, and so then Democratic Senate President Steve Sweeney did not convene confirmation hearings for Christie's nominee, which is Ann Patterson, well-respected corporate lawyer out of Morristown. Now, what got really complicated here is that along the way here, we had Chief Judge Stuart Rabner elevated an appellate judge, Edwin Stern, temporarily, which he's permitted to do. Now, the state has 7 members on the court. It actually needs 5 to function. So at some point, I guess last December, sitting Justice Rivera Soto, who was appointed under the McGreevy administration, decided that he was going to abstain as a matter of principle from all decisions, quote, of this court for so long as it remains unconstitutionally constituted. It's his belief that you can't temporarily elevate a justice as has been done by the chief judge.
This was his way of protesting Christie's lack of renewal of Wallace?
Well, no, it's Rabner's elevation of a temporary justice to fill this spot for now. Now, what's happened now is that apparently just last week, Justice Rivera Soto thought better of that and said now he's going to vote when Stern's unconstitutional vote does not determine the outcome. And so he cast the one lone dissenting vote in the property case. Now, what's going on here is really both Senate President Sweeney and Governor Christie have a principle worth fighting for.
On the one hand?
Well, on the one hand, the governor has the right to nominate who he thinks is best, and the Senate president has an obligation to make sure that that the court itself does not fall prey to partisan ideological packing.
Listeners, you should know, by the way, that Bob Henley does a weekly column called Stuck Nation on our politics website. It's freecountry.org. It's worth reading, and it comes out every Monday. And in yesterday's Martin Luther King Day edition, you wrote, ironically, our first African-American president is now presiding over a nation with the greatest disparity in wealth since the 1920s. More than 40 years after Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech challenged the nation, that American promissory note remains an IOU for millions of Americans. What were you getting at?
Well, I was getting at the fact that I'm kind of surprised that this tremendous wealth and inequality question that is before us now, I mean, it's never been so great a chasm as it is today, just did not surface anywhere in the major media. Maybe it was because of the tragedy of Tucson, but clearly right now there's a national moment where working people have never been so disadvantaged. And one of the big disappointments of the Obama administration is that so many millions of people who thought that they would be able to be helped by this mortgage intervention program were left twisting in the wind by Treasury. I mean, it's just passing strange to me that at this national moment we're not discussing that tremendous inequity.
But taking all of this conversation together is the dilemma that it takes government action to reduce inequality, because unbridled capitalism is an inequality machine despite its other virtues. But government is broke for the safety net expansions, and the public believes that anything that limits the ability of the very rich to earn most of the wealth, like a living wage law or higher taxes on the top, is either a breach of liberty or a job-destroying regulation. You know, at least enough people believe that to make them politically unfeasible.
Well, I think the problem, though, is I'd like to blow that paradigm out a little bit, because we're in this financial crisis in a time where global wealth moves around, hot money moves around on a 24/7 cycle. And there's really, the nation state is lagging behind in its ability to tax and made accountable. I mean, that's why you're seeing huge, vast wealth be able to say to Greece, you know what, I don't like your social contract. I'll be out of here and sell your currency short by tomorrow and your bonds if you don't get something a little more austere. They're doing that from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. They're doing it here in the United States. And there's no countervailing force yet globally to say, whoa, let's make great wealth accountable.
Well, maybe the countervailing force is the Swiss banker who handed over documents to WikiLeaks' Julian Assange at a news conference yesterday. I thought leaks were secret under the table. He did it right at a news conference. And there are some questions about this guy, but what he's alleging, at least, is massive tax evasion through Swiss banks, including the one that he used to work for, by people in the United States, people in the UK, elsewhere in the Western world, who had the ability to move their money across borders illegally, he says, and not pay their taxes.
Well, my biggest concern is actually we're in a world where you may not be able to preserve great fortunes without legally using, and that's the thing I'm focused on. I mean, illegal thing, yes, that needs to be focused on. But we have a situation now where U.S. multinational corporations, with the help of the U.S. taxpayer and the Federal Reserve, got the credit pump primed up and managed to carry on after the great credit collapse. But now they've made money overseas, but they don't want to bring it back home. They don't want to bring it back home. And until they bring it back home, we're not going to have the money needed for small businesses and mid-sized businesses. So right now they're trying to cut a deal, Brian, about when to repatriate those dollars.
WNYC's Bob Henley, among other things, you can read his Stuck Nation column at our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. Bob,
thanks, Brian. Sorry about the cell phone.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Who was that? Never mind. Baby Doc is back in Haiti. Should he play a leadership role or be placed under arrest? We'll take your calls. Haitians, you want to weigh in on this? And we have a guest from the Haitian radio station in New York, and we have a guest from Amnesty International who says, put them behind bars today, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692.